Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for an evening of talking about Dungeons and or Dragons. I am, once again, David Shears, and I am your host tonight, and I will be chatting to Liz, whom you can see here. Liz, for people who may not know that much about you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. I'm relatively sort of new to Roll Together. In the daytime, I look after servers, networking, computers, and any other time, I'm generally doing nerdy stuff. So I DM, I play D&D, I play computer games, all that kind of real nerdy stuff.
Awesome stuff. That's how I would describe it, because that's pretty much what I spend my time doing as well. And tonight, Liz will be joining us to go through some enticing questions and adventurous anecdotes. What questions, you ask? Well, the dice decide. Before we kick off, this stream will run for approximately an hour. We are delighted to be sponsored by Hero Forge, Ultra Pro, and Elderwood Academy, and supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep, and Level Up Dice. We are Roll Together RPG on all social media, and a massive thank you once again to our D20 Club on Patreon. Check it out. Our shows are available as podcasts. Just search Roll Together RPG on your favorite podcasting app. So, without further ado, Liz, is it time to roll that dice and see what question we have for you today?
Yes, roll that dice.
There's a very popular emoji which will currently be making its way through the chat. Is it emoji or emoticon? Who knows? Who cares? Doesn't matter. That is a 3.
Ooh, okay.
And it's an interesting one, possibly a controversial one to begin with. We'll see, depending on your answer. I'll be the judge of the controversy.
Gosh.
So 3 means I ask you this, Liz. What is your favorite character class?
Ooh, okay. There's a lot to choose from. I would say that my favorite would be Wizard. And I think it's because of the versatility, as mostly with any class, really. Mm. But as a wizard, you can choose to be quite offensive. You can choose to solely look after people if you want to be that type of wizard. Personally, I quite enjoy the sort of control the battlefield aspect of wizardry, or sort of buffing others as well. I try to use as few offensive spells as I can, not to be a burden, but to challenge myself. I have a sort of personal vendetta against the Firebolt spell, just because I feel like it's overused, so I try to not use that at all.
So it starts at the cantrips and then just works its way upward. So can you think of a time in game where you've used a wizard in a controlling way, or in a non-typically offensive way, just sort of use those... There's not the flashy spells, but the clever ones.
Mm-hmm. I play in a home game, and I play a high elf wizard called Yurisha. Now, Yurisha, she's very into self-preservation and will pretty much do anything to avoid conflict directly. So I don't think she's ever been hit, and we've been running this campaign for about a year. I don't think she's ever been hit by a melee attack, because she's that type. So things like mirror image, shield, mage armor. First thing every morning, mage armor, just in case, you never know. Even though it could be a shopping day, doesn't matter. Put the mage armor on. Spells like grease. She's recently acquired modify memory. Not used it yet though, but could be fun.
Yeah.
And just general stuff to bewilder and confuddle people, really.
Oh, it's that classic, magic from the mist sort of thing. Yeah, that always reminds me of the Ursula Le Guin, Wizards of Earthsea, kind of arriving in the mists and where is the wizard? I cannot find them. Striking and then hitting yourself, unfortunately, in the knee, which may or may not have happened to me in a home game. I don't like to talk about it. It's too painful.
Was that a result of a natural one?
It may have been, yes. I need to give George his dice back. So in terms of just slightly turning the question on its head, is there a class that you don't like to play?
Yes, and it's one that I have played in a game on Roll Together. So a rogue, I'm so bad at being a rogue, and you've probably seen this. I don't think I've landed a hit once in order to get sneak attack damage. I fail every stealth check. I think I'm just a cursed rogue, and I don't know if that's a new class coming out anytime soon, but I think I'd be well suited. So yeah, I'm just not very good at being roguey, and I don't know why. The other one would probably be the class that I know the least about, and that's Artificer.
Oh, yeah. New edition.
Baffles me. I should probably do some reading. But if I was landed with that, I would be rabbit in headlights time.
I remember when I was playing Windfall in Waterdeep, and a character who it may have been announced may well be making their return very soon in a campaign. The Tortle Artificer, old Georgie. And I remember sort of looking at as various things happening in the game and being like, hang on, what? And then went to look at the actual class and was like, what? it's absolutely ridiculous. I wouldn't have the first clue how to begin playing it, but some of the stuff that can be done, oh goodness me, I'm excited to see how that develops with this this party that has been announced and will be coming up soon. And I'm assuming, look, if it hasn't been announced, we can cut it out, but whom might you be playing in the upcoming funsies?
Oh, well, I will be maybe playing Enoch the Vague, a wizard of all things. I'm very excited.
Foreshadowing!
A wizard who doesn't like to be offensive as well. It's like it's a theme. But yes, they are a gnome of the deep variety, not that they're all kind of chill and know things. He's a Sverf Neblin, I believe it's pronounced.
Yeah. They're awesome.
Kind of fits into the Feywild theme. I think people think that Enoch is from the Feywild when he's actually not. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with that.
Nice little teaser there. So more to be discovered for those who are fortunate enough to tune in on Mondays. Okay, shall we roll the dice once more?
Roll that dice.
Oh, yes. Cheers. Roll that dice. Oh, okay. This is I love it when this question comes up because everybody has such a different response to it. It's a 17. A 17 means that I ask you this, Liz, is how do you feel about fudging rolls?
I love that question. I think that's a smashing question.
Thank you.
It depends on the context. So I do DMing, and I do DMing for a lot of new groups. And I think there's a meme on the internet of the DM screen saving a little bunny from an eagle or something. And a lot of the time, let's say you've just introduced the wonderful game of D&D to people who aren't that sure, and they've taken the time to put a character together on D&D Beyond, roll out the stats, for example, look at the class, and then on their first encounter, you as the DM roll two natural 20s against them. You know that that's going to kill them. I can't do that to new players. I think that's a bit harsh. Once they get going, there will be no fudging, I believe. Very much in challenge and risk. But for new players, no, don't do that. I think some people do enjoy the aspect of killing off characters in D&D. I think there's a space for that, but for first time, no. Just let people get into it first.
I think I agree with you there. My personal view is that I don't like to fudge, and I don't like to be fudged on behalf of, although if it happens that I don't know about it, all right, okay.
But you don't know.
Yeah, I can totally see that scenario where you've got a bunch of new players sitting around the table and they're like, oh great, cool, I've spent that time making my character and I'm ready and I'm good. It's like you step out of the bar, it's like, cool, I'm heroic, everyone dies. Okay, cool, well that was fun. What are we doing now? Are we spending another couple of hours making new characters? Isn't that the game? Isn't that what you're here for?
Oh bless, yeah, which isn't the best first impression of this game, and I don't think it gives the game the justice that it deserves for new players especially. In terms of fudging though, general, I don't fudge dice rolls, but sometimes if I have a big party of let's say 8 players who are currently level 6, I'm not referring to any home game right now, but let's say they're currently at level 6 and they're fighting something with 150 HP, they will total that, and they will total that in about around two rounds, so I may fluctuate the HP on the fly just to give them a bit more time to get used to the skills and get used to level six. But that would be the only other occasion where I would consider changing things.
That's fair enough, I would say. It's almost like, I'm almost imagining sort of like tutorial modes when you start a video game, and it's that opening quest. It's like, you can't be killed. You just got to get used to the mechanics and things, and then you go out into the big wide world, and then there's dangerous things that can sort of kill you and that. And yeah, I also think if it's to make the game more fun, like changing a stat block or something around, then totally, yeah, I'm on board with that. I wouldn't even count that as fudging roles, really. It's more like just tweaking the content a bit.
Yeah, and like stuff like, you know, let's say the big bad monster that they've been fighting for one round and only has one HP left. let's say that big monster gets like a blood frenzy going on in its last little moments of life, and its attacks that normally would deal 1d6 plus 4 damage actually deal 3 times that in its last little moments. That changes stuff, and it gets people thinking of stuff differently. So again, that's something that I would change. Maybe fate could change as a result of that, but dice rolls, nah, leave the dice to it.
Fair play. So you're leaving the recipe unchanged, but maybe tweaking the seasoning a little bit, just add a bit of spice here and there.
I like that analogy, yes.
We'll go with that then, yeah. D&D, very similar to cooking, and I'm not just saying that because I'm currently hungry.
No.
Shall we then, on that spicy note, roll the dice once more and see what we have for our next question? Okay. That's a 6. A 6 means that I ask you, how did you start, Liz, playing TTRPGs? These are tabletop role-playing games, for those who may not be aware of the term.
Okay, so there's a little stream that I'm not sure many people have ever watched, and it is called Critical Role, which came out almost visible to me, let's say, around 2016. But I was super resistant to watch it. I pretty much refused for about 6 months. And the reason wasn't because I didn't think I would like it. The reason was because I knew I would get into a rabbit hole. And lo and behold, I kind of did. D&D pretty much is my life right now, but I regret nothing. I regret absolutely nothing. But yeah, that kind of, at first I didn't understand the nuance of D&D. I just thought, you know, there's a monster, kill it, done. Next, loot it, go to the next monster. But there are streams out there, it doesn't have to be Critical Role. It could be with Roll Together, where you you can see that there's characterization behind the PCs. There's even characterization behind the villains, and sometimes the best villains are the ones that have got more personality to them. So yeah, once I realized that, and once I got a copy of all the books and all my dice, yes, I was thoroughly addicted. So I'd say 2016, Critical Role, that's pretty much fun.
Thank you, Matt Mercer. Yeah.
Yes.
And are you a digital books kind of person, or do you like the hard copies?
I have both.
That's fair. That's fair.
I started off with, I think Curse of Strahd was the first module that I bought.
That's a great module, yeah.
And it actually really helped me work out how to DM. But then I realized that in the days of sitting at the same table with people and playing D&D on the table, I didn't like having my laptop in front of me. I wanted a binder, and you don't really want to type out all of the box text from Strahd.
True.
You kind of need a digital copy for that. So that's when I started to get digital copies. And the digital copies now are my go-to, because there's a fabulous website out there called D&D Beyond. And you can, on your phone, get the source books, which if you're bored on the bus and want to have a little look at some of the content, you can do that. So yeah, both.
Yeah, I took the plunge just after this year started, I think. And I was like, okay, I need to know more about, I've got to get to the basics of how to play D&D. I want to know more. So I just got all of the source books on Beyond. It's been devouring them. I'm not quite ready to dip my toe into the DM waters yet.
I think you'll have a good time.
It looks far too much like you have to be organized, and I prefer to just turn up and be chaotic. But, you know,
I'm
thinking I might try and run a little couple of the Candlekeep mysteries at some point, just sort of try out seeing what it's like from that side of the table. For you, what would your ideal mix of role play versus combat be? Or is it like a question of each session will have its own flavor? And I guess it depends on whether you're going through a module or a homebrew, right?
Yeah, so even though I have a lot of the modules, I tend to go a little off-piste, and I enjoy doing that. It means that I can be creative, and it means that people haven't played it before. But in terms of roleplay versus combat, I like a little bit of combat every time. I enjoy a shopping time, don't get me wrong. But if there's more than one, I get a bit itchy. Even though I don't tend to do much offensive stuff in terms of battle, I like to get stuck in there and get involved. So doesn't necessarily mean that I hate roleplay. I love it. You can't shut me up in game, which is weird because in real life I'm quite quiet, but in D&D land, can't shut me up. So I like an even split, but there kind of needs to be a little bit of combat or an encounter at least in a game for me.
Absolutely. I think I'm probably of the same mind. Like, I like to do the role play stuff, and I love to do the kind of character building and the backstory thing that's coming through. But at the same time, like, I've got all these abilities on this sheet, right?
I want to
use them. I want to do these things. I think, like, last campaign, there was a spell that I had prepped for the entire campaign, and I was just hoping that there would be a moment where I got to use it. It never came. I mean, that's fine. But one day, I'm going to keep this spell prepped until the one time that I actually get to use it, and then it probably won't work, but it'll be fine. It was, if you're wondering, it was Magic Circle.
Ooh, nice.
It's just like, it's a bit of an annoying, yeah, 1 minute cast time. You've got to try and get someone really monologuing while you're just like,
Tell me your evil plan and how you got here and all of that. I just need to 1 minute, so I'm just going to pop this
sometimes down. I just mutter to myself while drawing arcane sigils. There's nothing in it.
Everybody do that? I mean...
So yeah, we'll see. But I don't know, do you have a favorite ability that you're looking forward to using, or would that perhaps be giving the game away?
Looking forward to using there is a skill that Enoch the Vague has, and it's called Hypnotic Gaze, because Enoch is part of the enchantment variety, and I like the idea of being able to look at someone and just cause them to be in a complete daze while, I don't know, the party can go and do stuff, or I can rifle through their pockets to get the thing that we were trying to find all along. How that's going to go down in a place where things, I don't know, might not be able to be charged, I don't know, but I'm willing to give it a go.
I think I can speak for myself and all of chat when we say we look forward to seeing how the hypnotic gaze works or doesn't, because both are fun, right?
I love failure. It's my favorite. If stuff goes wrong, let's go with it. I love it. Which is why I like the dice rolls falling the way they do. I love a natural one.
Absolutely. Just, yeah, let the dice decide. That's the mantra. And I'm getting strong Lucifer vibes of just like, you know, there's the hypnotic gaze. Like, what's your biggest desire? I can't do that voice. One day I will learn, but not today. On that slightly disappointing impression where I made Lucifer sound like Geppetto, I think it's time to roll
that dice
indeed,
yes.
And see what it has for us as it makes its way across the screen. What will it be? What will it mean?
Well,
it is an 11. And this is gonna cause some offense to, and you'll see why. The question I have to ask you is, who is your favorite character? And I'm afraid that will offend all of the other characters that you may have been
playing. Oh no. Well, I don't think a character that I play.
Indeed so, yes.
I don't think the person who I'm going to choose will mind if anybody was offended, because my favorite character is Yerusha Flake. Because she's just such a snob. This is the game that I've played every 2 weeks for a year, and I know her inside out. Noble, high elf, wizard. Yeah. And the way I see high elves specifically, because they last so long, the older they get, the more ethereal they are. And the younger they are, the more humane they are. So she's relatively young. for an elf. She's 83, which is kind of like 18, 19. Yeah. So she's still got that pettiness level available. So I enjoy letting my petty side free, which is one thing that I enjoy about D&D. You get to be someone else for a while, so why not be an absolute asshole?
Absolutely, right? Channel that energy into that enjoyment, that escapism.
Totally, and as long as it doesn't impact the group negatively. So I'm always conscious, like, you know, Yerisha kind of would maybe make the decision to go and, I don't know, kick someone for no reason. She wouldn't do that. She's far too less tactile than that. But I personally, as a player, probably wouldn't make that decision because it might run out badly for the group.
Hmm. Is this something you would you talk about in a session zero, particularly if you're thinking of creating a character that might be more controversial or might have a tendency to rub group members up the wrong way, just to kind of check in and say, like, look, this is the kind of thing I might do. How would you be with that?
Totally.
That sort of thing, yeah. And what can you think of any examples of when this character has been at the most archetypal high elf and arrogant moment?
Every game, but other than that,
apart from every time, Dave. Come on, you're not listening.
I commit. we visited a market. And before this point, the group had been out in the wilds. We'd not really been in civilization much. Mm. And we'd visited this market. And at this market, there was an elven blade shop. And Yerisha hadn't seen an elf for a long time, nor spoken in elvish. And she rocked up to this elven lady who was selling blades. I say rock up, she more sort of glid across to the... Which one is it?
Glid? Glided? Glided Glade. Sounds right. Glided. She air freshened. I think glided. As an English graduate, I really should know, but I'm not going to Google it. I'm gonna stand by glided, and if I'm wrong, then chat can judge me.
But anyway,
yeah, it's definitely slid, but glid? It might be glid? That'd be so strange. But anyway. So whatever which of those is correct that happens.
She moseyed on up. to this place, and she saw this elf who was selling blades. And the first thing she said was, "Speak to me in elvish." And the poor DM had to then say words in elvish to Yerisha, who talked back a little bit. She also requests the bard in the party to sing me a song. You know, she's very, everyone is there to make sure that Yerisha's life is as comfortable as it can be. So the bard is her onboard entertainment if they're traveling. You know, the rogue in the group is also quite muscly, so they do all of her bodyguarding. And the cleric, of course, is there to look after her and make sure that all of her needs are attended to.
Naturally. Would it be any other way? And no. Did the rest of the party need to be cajoled into this, or did they more or less fall in line?
Oh, they take the piss a lot, but in a friendly way. They're down for the joke, and they get that I'm also taking the piss by being this character. So it's all very much, is she going to do it? Oh God, she's done it. Okay. And they try and put her in situations that would cause more snobbery.
Okay, just to sort of double down on it, dial it up to the max.
For example, if there's an occasion where really the bard should be talking to, I don't know, the evil person, send Yerisha in, let's see what Yerisha does. I think I once had to go into a clerical office in this city in which we were in. And there was someone behind the desk who was your typical receptionist who wasn't really listening. And Yerisha full on Karen'd the situation. She requested to speak to the manager. Cool. She didn't get what she wanted. I think we eventually ended up in a fight because of Yerisha, but they sent me in.
they knew what they were getting into, right?
with that charisma minus two. Yes, they knew what they were getting into. Intelligent, no wisdom, no charisma.
Charisma minus two, entitlement plus 10.
Yes. I own everything, thank you. I have no money, but I own everything, yes.
I mean, it's more entertaining than just winning every persuasion roll, right?
Totally.
Gotta take the rough with the smooth. And speaking of the smooth, we're gonna roll the smooth edges of this dice once more and see what our next question will be. Oh, okay. It's a 16. Okay. 16 means that I ask you this, Liz, and only this. Okay. If you could make yourself in D&D, what would you be?
That is so hard. There's so much to choose from. okay. So race. We'll go with race first. I know I'm a human, but we'll look beyond that. I would put myself down as a tabaxi because I like to lounge around a lot and I like shiny things.
Fair.
I don't think I need more justification than that.
Don't need any justification. Go what you feel.
either that or dwarf, purely because I'm not that tall. But I think tabaxi's more fun, so we'll go with tabaxi. As for class, I do a lot of DMing. I'm going to say bard. Maybe with a touch of wizardry, because there always has to be some form of wizardry. I guess I do computer wizardry. So that would make sense. I like to think I do computer wizardry. I don't. But yeah, bard makes sense, I guess, for the DMing side. There's the storytelling aspect.
Yeah. High int, high charisma. What college of bard do you think?
Ooh, let's see. For some reason, College of Whispers sprung to mind, but that's probably not the best. There's a law college, I believe.
Yeah.
Probably the College of Law, because as much as I try to not dump law on people, I adore it. It's my favourite thing. I could read it for days. So I guess, Bard, College of Law. How about you?
I respect that so much. I grew up reading like all of the Salvatore Dritz books and Greenwood's books. War of the Spider Queen and that sort of thing. So I have to stop myself from just being like, and of course, we all know what happened in this land 623 years ago, right? No, we don't, Dave. Okay. But
really
I love it.
Though.
Like the I love the fact that the whole of the world of Faerun, every edition that ends, there was always some sort of major upheaval. And that was a way of kind of, this is why everything works differently now, and finding a way to make that work. I don't know if it, most people know, I think it's called, how would I pronounce it?
Dritz Duerden,
yeah. And it turned out, actually, that a lot of people were making drow rangers with panthers who had never heard of Dritz Duerden.
Really? That's mad. But
there you go. There seems to be something that just draws people in that direction. But yeah, oh gosh, if I was making myself, I mean, probably a bard or possibly a cleric, depending on like how, but I'd be like a cleric of Ow, probably, because I'd just have to be like that step above and be like, well, I'm going to worship the god that doesn't speak back because, Or a cleric of Mystra or something, like, because if you've got to worship something, might as well be magic. Although soon would be fun, because that's just like, oh, I'm going to do hedonism because my god demands it of me. Well, what can you do?
Yeah, so when I was playing Agnes as a cleric, I was a cleric of Kalemvor.
Oh, wow.
And it was the Grave Domain, so it was a fun way in my mind of being a cleric. I played Agnes as quite a sort of public school matronly type who had a very sort of rough and ready relationship with death. You know, it happens. If someone's dying on the floor, it's very much, well, get up, or there's a lot of whinging, you just need a cure wound spell, you know, you'll be fine. I like the idea of tipping clericism on its head. It doesn't always have to be all like, love everybody, heal everybody, that's what I'm here for. It can be a bit more, I'm going to use the word edgy, it's probably not the right word to use, but it can be a bit more edgy than just heal people.
Yeah, for sure.
There's more to it.
Having spent the entire last campaign playing a cleric that I hope wasn't just like, oh yes, well, what do you want me to do? Oh, heal? Sure, I'm just going to go back to playing on my phone. Heal again. Cool. Okay, thanks. All right. No, absolutely. And that is fun, right? Is taking these archetypes and mm-hmm. finding ways to inject character and persona and you know, a bit of gray between the it's not just like I am evil or I am super good. No, yeah. Get out of the way of the cart. I will throw myself in front of it. No, like, because humanity is more nuanced than that and character is more nuanced than that. I totally agree with you. It's much more fun to explore that.
And I love the idea of alignment shifting.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have you don't have to be lawful good all the time. What if you weren't? It's the element of what if that makes characters more interesting. So, you know, you might start off neutral. Which way are you going to go? And why? And what would tip you either way?
That's fun though, right? That's like that's what I love about the Witcher games, like actual consequences to decisions.
I love the Witcher.
Right.
Yes. I've played it way too many times, way too many different consoles. I have it on everything. Yeah.
I mean, it's just a phenomenal series of games. That's all there is to say about it. And yeah, thoroughly recommend anybody check it out. But what I love about it is that actions have consequences. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love, and tell me if this is the same for you, but playing a campaign where there is that consequence. And certainly now with Tasha's and the ability to swap subclass, there is a lot more opportunity for actual development and growth that has tangible in-game mechanics.
And there's a rationale behind it.
Exactly.
It's in this book, I can do this.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's not quite as fun as the belt of opposite alignment from Baldur's Gate.
I've come across that one.
There's an item. There's one of the deck of many things that automatically changes your alignment. And there's various stories about paladins who pull the wrong card and then suddenly just become evil. there's also and I know Baldur's Gate 2. Edward of Deseron was desperately questing for a belt, which that was a changed from. I think one it changed alignment and gender as well on a sort of random basis.
Okay.
And of course, the druid spell, what's it called? Reincarnation, which brings you back, but completely changed in terms of species and so forth. So there's a lot of scope for development.
Roll.
Yeah. And I love that. I love having some decisions that I make for myself, but some decisions that are almost inflicted upon me to sort of guide that way. So what's the most a character that you've played has changed from the beginning of a campaign to the end, would you say?
Oh gosh. Because I'm gonna have to say Yorisha again, because she's the one that I've played so much. So I have said, you know, she's very snooty, she is very self-centered, but as we've gone on throughout this year, she has become less so. The people around her who were her staff now are her companions, and she does try to look after them. You know, I said earlier that as a wizard, I'd like to play in a style of control the battlefield. That's how Yorisha started, but now she's tending to buff people instead. to give them better stuff. She probably wouldn't tell them that that's why she did it. She'll probably tell them that she did that for her own reasons. But that's how she is developing. And she's the one who's developed so much. And it sounds such a small thing, but for her, that's quite big. For her to go from, I will only look after myself, to, oh God, we appear to be dying, I'll turn you into a woolly mammoth. That's quite a big jump for Yorisha. So I would say, I would say her.
I love that though, because it's so subtle and you're not throwing it into people's faces and being like, look, now my character's being self-sacrificing. And it would only be there if people were looking for it to kind of make that connection. Mm-hmm. And that just feels very organic.
Like,
it's this, these shifts that have come about because of in-game decisions. And it's not always like I've gone from chaotic evil to lawful good. It's just I am gradually moving along this gradient towards becoming a slightly arguably, you know, depending on the criteria, more improved version of myself. Well, let's just say more party focused.
Yes. Right?
That's quite a neutral term, but it seems to describe it quite well. And I like that. That sort of that change, because it's part of what makes the game fun, right? And no disrespect to people who like soap operas, but in soap operas genuinely the plot changes but the characters don't. And it's more, I think of D&D as being more like a mini series, and that the plot has an arc, but each character individually, you know, ideally, I'm not going to tell other people how to play, but I like to play with players who do this, and I'm fortunate I do, their characters should have an arc and intersect and play off each other as well. So that title feels nicer at the end.
But you don't always have to have that arc in your brain the moment you begin.
Oh, not
that
at all.
Arc can just happen in reaction to everything that's gone on so far.
Yeah, absolutely. It's having that willingness to allow yourself to be moved, I guess.
Yeah. And trusting the other players to allow you to do that as well. And being able to get to a level where you're comfortable changing your character's choices. Because, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are like, well, that's the only thing my character would ever do. But, like, ask yourself, what if they just for one game, what if they didn't? What impact would that have? It doesn't have to be a huge choice. What if it's just a slight change? If it doesn't make your game any better, cool. But if it does, and if the party succeeds as a result of it, do it.
So what's your initial response if you heard the phrase, it's what my character would do?
I would be sort of glad to start off with, especially with new players, because it means that they're thinking about that.
Yeah.
If it's used in any way to excuse bad behavior, I don't think that's a great idea. I think often it can be. I've never experienced it in that way. I've heard horror stories, as I'm sure quite a few people have, where someone, I don't know, kills a noble person for no reason. Well, it's what my character would do. Why did you pick that character then?
Yeah.
Is that fun for you? Because if it is, I suggest a different game, perhaps.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a game with people who like to kill noble people for no reason. It needs to be a joint decision, because D&D is about everyone telling the story. It's not just about one person going off and killing a person. You know?
Yeah. I've probably all seen stories like this of people who don't quite necessarily understand that everybody at the table is of equal value. And it's not like, and now back to the story all about my character. And I one of the best ways I ever saw a DM talk about dealing with this is just like, one of the players wanted to go off and do their own thing and just decided not to hear the call to adventure. And it's like, okay, great. And the DM responded to this by basically every hour cutting back to them for 2 minutes, being like, you're still sitting on a bench. And back to the story. What did you learn?
Oh gosh, yeah, it makes stuff awkward for people though, right? Especially if it is done with malicious intent. If it's not, genuinely, you know, that is what my character would do, fine.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it to try and, I don't know, beat the game, there's no game to beat. It's not a game like that, you know? Unless it is. But I don't think it is.
Hopefully that the nature of the campaign will have been established at the beginning, so that people aren't coming into it being like things that are going to go off the rails too much.
That's why session zeros are super important.
Absolutely.
You lay down those rules immediately.
Safety and fun, right? The two most important things.
Totally. Everyone's not having fun, something needs to change.
Yeah. Because it should be fun, right? We do it to enjoy ourselves.
We do it to escape, to enjoy ourselves, and not sit around while some person at the table goes off and kills people for no reason. You know, it's about not being selfish as well.
I'm just trying to think if I've ever killed anybody for no reason. I don't think so. In game, I should hasten to add, in case the FBI is listening, in game. I don't think so. I thought there was a reason. I'm one of those people, like, I give it away when I'm about to do something that's, you know, arguably controversial, because I can't stop apologizing profusely before it happens. And just like, I'm really sorry.
That's so good, though, because that means that you're conscientious of the rest of the group and their enjoyment. Whereas if you just went off and did it without maybe sort of mentioning it, that could raise a couple of eyebrows and confuse a couple of people.
Throw the dice on the table and storm out. I think you're fine. I'm done. No.
Is that the D&D equivalent of a mic drop?
I guess so, yeah.
Pass the dice away.
It's not a net 20, I'm leaving. Anyway, that's slightly incongruous social aside, although very interesting it was. Shall we move back to the rolling of the dice and the asking of the questiones?
Yes.
I don't know why I keep saying it questione. I can only think I'm channeling my brother in some way, and the fact that as a salubrious Geordie, he has to add some sort of exotic nature to everything. But nonetheless, I'm saying it, I'll stick with it, questiones. And it is a 9. And somewhat appropriately, based on what we've been talking about thus far, 9 means I ask you this, Liz. What would you say to a new player, either someone who's new to TTRPGs or someone who's new to D&D in particular?
Oh my gosh. I've got a lot to tell you in a non-creepy way. So, first thing I tell new players is don't worry about the rules too much. But don't forget them. Try to learn them, because if you forget that you need to learn rules, you're going to rely on someone to tell you what they are, and we can't be doing that for session after session. But you know, first session, gosh, don't worry about the rules, don't worry about all the crazy numbers on your sheet, just go for it. Tell me what you'd like to do, we'll do it. Also, you know, if you're ever into computer games where you happen to, I don't know, play The Witcher or Skyrim or that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Give D&D a go. You might like it. If you enjoy books, give D&D a go. You might like it. If you breathe, give D&D a go. You might like it. there's so much to the game that fits everybody. Speak to your DM if there's something that you don't like. Always be happy to, always feel free to ask questions. There's no wrong question in D&D. Ask them, because either the DM will be able to tell you the answer, or maybe the rest of the group who are learning at the same time as you will be able to tell you the answer, and it'll be a group learning experience. Yeah, if you're a new player and you're just starting out, do your thing and enjoy it. Be weird. Go for it. Yeah, I have lots of things to say to new players.
Would you recommend a class for new players, or do you ever do a pre-made character to ease somebody in, or do you sort of walk them through the process of? Because it is a bit daunting, the amount of choices that are available, especially now, right, with a few more books out.
If I have a small group, I will try to sit down with them with the books.
Yeah,
and go through in as vague detail as I can what each race is, what each class is. If I have a big group, I lean towards creating character sheets, various, and asking them to pick based on what they like. But I won't make a set amount. I'll make, I don't know, probably triple the amount that's available, just so they've got choice, and I'll let them know what each thing is and the general overview.
It's like the presets in Skyrim, right?
Totally.
Or, yeah. Or Dark Souls. Maybe not Dark Souls. Dark Souls should not be like D&D.
I gave that game about 10 minutes of my time and I got so frustrated I had to turn off and not go back. I was done.
I'm sorry to bring it up.
I'm just a triggering moment for me, but it wasn't that bad. What were we saying?
I know it distracts everything because suddenly doom is approaching. You talk about you might make up a series of character templates for players and kind of give them a brief overview of what they're like and get them to choose what sounds fun.
Yeah, but for me, the most important thing that any new player can do is tell me what their player looks like. What does your character look like? Because it engages the imagination.
Yeah,
and a lot of us who aren't sort of working in a creative industry, you don't get much chance to use your imagination.
Yeah, true.
Especially as you grow up. You know, when you're little, you're in your imagination all the time. Then you go to school and maybe you use your imagination to do some creative writing, but then you move into job land and you probably don't get much chance to use it. And the more opportunity you get as an adult to use that imagination, the better. So I say, go all out with your character description. I want to know everything. Tell me what you look like. Tell me how you walk. Tell me why you walk that way. Do you have a limp? Anything that allows them or gives them permission to just use that imagination once in a while. Because not everyone else, not a lot of people get that chance.
And I guess even then, even if you're starting with a pre-made template, by bringing in these personal things that are unique to oneself, then you automatically start establishing ownership of the character. And conversely, like, I guess the idea then is that people become more invested in the game and invested in, like, I could attest, people get invested in the game and you see like the reaction to something dramatic that happens or character deaths and things. We see people on Roll Together, those reactions are real. Like, yeah. It's not, I don't know how to fake motion. I'm not that good. Yeah. But I love that though. I love that feeling that everybody wants to be part of this story, and I think that's a really, really good suggestion of how to get new players started. Like, that makes sense to me. I was throwing him right at the deep end, I tell you, but I'd played like, you know, CRPGs, Baldur's Gate and stuff, so I was kind of coming at it from that point of view. But the idea that there were other people and they weren't just like AI companions.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the guy who in Skyrim sacrificed my companion to get some Daedric stuff, right?
Oh no.
So I had to learn how to play with others, but I got there hopefully quite quickly, but it took a bit of time just to readjust the mindset, right?
I think, but I'm quite similar with yeah. game with video game playing. Yeah, I don't play well with other people in a video game setting. But it's completely flipped on its head in D&D because it's a collaborative storytelling experience, and it does take you a little minute to get into that headspace. Mm. I think my first question was to my DM was, I can do anything? Because in a game, you know, you get three options on the screen, right? Yeah. Or like things to say. I have to make up what I say. Like, it was that kind of, oh, okay. I can literally do anything, okay. And that gets the imagination going a little bit more and allows you to think of more fun things that your character could do. What if in Skyrim you could, I don't know, be a bard for a bit?
Yeah.
You know.
There's nothing to stop you, I suppose. You could just wander around Skyrim singing to yourself. Get a lute to start playing the bandolin. Why not? But, you know, if a bard is singing in Skyrim and there's no one around to hear it, does it make a noise?
Is it really singing? What is this bard of which you speak?
it's something about your actions having an impact on others and their actions having an impact on you, and then working, and it's that collaborative thing. Like, you can't play D&D on your own. Well, I mean, I suppose you could try, but why? Skyrim exists. But it's that collaborative thing. Have you ever used the Beyond tools for these purposes? Because I've never used it, but I've noticed they've got like a quick character thing on there, so I wonder if that might be quite an easy way of just coming up with some templates and stuff.
I probably wouldn't for templates for new players, because I need to kind of, I'm a little bit of a control freak, and I need to make sure that they've not got some weird stuff, because random things do happen and I don't want them to end up with some random stuff. However, for me, I've given it a go for a couple of characters that I've thought about playing, and then I've gone, no, I need to be the thing that I've decided in my head, please. But I love the idea of the let the dice decide. It's a very good mechanism. That, you know, I think some people should consider using in some talk together shows. You know, just roll the dice and let the dice decide what.
Good. Perhaps we, I mean, you know what? I think that's such a good idea.
Good luck.
I'm actually going to implement it right this second. And we're going to roll a dice. I know, there's always somebody in chat who's like, I think I find it's die, actually. And I'm like, well, it may be, but in this universe, grammar is reconstituted as we roll that dice.
Dice.
Ooh, interesting. So this is a 4. And a 4 means that I'll ask you this, Liz. Who would you love, this is our take on the classic dinner party question, who would you love to have at your gaming table?
I think I've had an actual sort of like job interview where I've had that question. My answer will be the same. No, my answer. Oh gosh, 4 people. 4 people.
Many as you like. I mean, D&D with more than 5 is probably getting on for a big group. But hey,
that's true. That's a very good dinner party. Okay,
4's a good place to start.
Let's go.
We don't have to be restrictive here on Talk Together.
I'm going to start with Sir Ian McKellen.
Nice.
And I will insist that he plays a wizard. I'm not even going to lie, I will hand him that pre-made wizard sheet and I will sit him down at my table and ask him to play. I probably won't let him leave my house. I will wrap him up in cotton wool and keep him on a shelf. I won't do that. I'm lying. I would love to play with or DM for Sir Ian McKellen. That would be amazing. Who next? Sue Perkins. Mm. In fact, I believe Sue Perkins has played D&D before.
Oh.
You know, wizards do their sort of yearly D&D live
event. Yeah.
Well, I believe Sue Perkins was part of that, like a comedy setting, and she was with other comedians, various. And she was pretty good. She was pretty good at it. I think she's played it before. So I think I'd have her. Alan Rickman.
I would adore Alan Rickman. Yes.
In fact, I would want him to be evil. I'd want him to play an evil character for me in one of my campaigns. Because the way he speaks, his timing and the way he phrased stuff was just gorgeous. Yeah. So him, please, that would be amazing. And I guess Gemma Whelan from Game of Thrones.
Oh.
And that's another live D&D event that I've seen where she played with some other Game of Thrones cast. And she was absolute carnage incarnate. And everyone needs that in a game.
You've got to have that chaos factor, right?
she played a rogue called Barbara Bladeboy. And this rogue, Barbara Bladeboy, had a French accent all the way through, which she did not give up.
Of course, why not?
Barbara Bladeboy. And she only had one shoe on. And she had never played D&D before, I don't think. But she committed to this all the way through the three-hour stream. It was perfect. So her, please.
Oh, amazing. Remind me who she played on Game of Thrones?
Yara Greyjoy.
That's right, yeah.
And she's also in Gentleman Jack.
Yeah.
As Gentleman Jack's sister.
Very, very good.
Very funny.
This would be a hell of a table. Yeah. Alan Rickman, I think, has one of the most distinctive voices in English acting. The other, in my view, being Jeremy Irons.
Remind me who that is. I'm really sorry.
So Jeremy Irons was Alan Rickman was Hans Gruber in Die Hard 1. And mm-hmm. Jeremy Irons played Hans Gruber's brother in Die Hard 3.
Okay.
And has done various other things. He was in the Borgias and stuff. Bright City Revisited. But another iconic English actor with a very distinctive voice. And of course, Ian McKellen. I can just imagine that he would make a role and you'd look at him and he would need to say sort of, "You shall not pass."
I would put that man on a bridge. I would put him on a bridge, and hey, there'd be a bell rock coming up. Go on, Ian. Give us your best.
Fantastic. So you would be DMing in this scenario.
I mean, yeah, I'd be happy to play if Alan Rickman was DMing. I think he would do some fantastic creatures, some fantastic villains specifically. Oh, he'd be gorgeous.
Oh, fantastic. I would be a fly on that wall if that was the case.
Come with. Yes, I'm hosting it tomorrow. Please do drop in.
I should be polymorphed for the occasion. Yes. Excellent. Well, speaking of polymorph, shall we polymorph our minds into dice and our dice into rolls and see what our next question will be as it makes its way across the screen? Ooh, interesting. It's a one. And a one, usually in D&D terms, it's a negative. It's a bad thing. But in this case, no. In this case, I'm asking you, what is your most epic character moment?
Oh, God. Okay. Okay. There's a couple. I mentioned the woolly mammoth turning the bard into with the bard's consent, just to confirm. I don't like turning people into stuff without them agreeing to it.
Yeah,
totally. But that was in a dire situation. Something needed to happen. So Eurysia lunged and stepped forward and turned the bard into a woolly mammoth, and the dragon was defeated. And it was just chaos. chaos, and it was marvelous. But I'd say, as a funny answer to the epic question, there was a moment in Red's campaign in the Escape from the Pyramidic, and it's not really an epic. It was just a nice little situation that I had with John, who played Sister Belinda. I was Ribka, the blue tabaxi. Sister Belinda was a strange little lady. I'm not quite sure what she was. But there was a moment where Ribka, I think she'd been charmed by Sister Belinda because it was a PvP game. And Ribka said, "Hold my hand, Sister Belinda." And I just liked the idea of the claws of Ribka just digging in slightly into Sister Belinda's little hand, and Sister Belinda gripping just a little bit further. It's not really an epic moment. I just thought it was quite a nice little interaction, which later involved, I believe I jumped on Sister Belinda and began to claw her face off. We were nearing the end of the game. We had to move on. That was quite a fun little interaction. So I'd say that.
So this was the little precursor where it all began. This is the one grain of rice that began the pile up, the slight bit of snow that started to shift before that avalanche. It all began at that point.
That's definitely, it's that moment where everyone's smiling and everything is fine, and then when everyone's back is turned, carnage happens.
Ooh, the tension mounts. Oh, fantastic.
Sure, tension you could cut with a knife. No, it wasn't that. It was not that.
I mean, I will say, like, you know, sometimes you got a mammoth, right? Like, when the midden hits the windmill, like, right, people will be turned.
Break out the mammoth. If in doubt, mammoth.
But I agree consensually. You might appreciate this, actually. The last campaign that we're in, I had the polymorph spell before I changed subclass, and this whole plan got completely derailed. Oh. But I basically caught a little rat, and my plan was to sort of put the rat in a jar because nobody in the party would benefit from polymorph, so it was completely pointless. But my idea was that if there's ever a group of enemies, just throw the bottle and then change it into a whale as it was mid-air.
That would make sense. It would then fall and cause at least some kind of force damage, right?
Somebody please make this happen with, you know, whale strike, and let us know how you...
Whalegate.
Whalegate, yeah. I just want somebody to do it so I can live vicariously through that.
Listen, I've got an idea in my head now. I'll try and make it happen somewhere.
If you do, I will be so pleased. Does it involve whales in any way?
Possibly. It could involve a polymorph spell. I'm not going to give too much away, David.
I will watch avidly to see if I can spot the moment and be like, that was the one.
I'm not promising anything.
I'll watch avidly anyway, you know, that's my blessing and my curse.
I love it.
I can't get enough of D&D, man. It's an obsession.
It is my life. I'm not going to lie. When I'm not at work, I am D&D. That's it.
As
I'm thinking
it
about it.
Should be.
I'm writing it, I am playing it, I am DMing it, that's it.
I don't have a D&D problem. I have D&D, no problem.
Cool. Yes, that's it.
how many dice is too much? I don't know.
I'm looking down because I'm slowly getting madly embarrassed at the amount on my desk.
Look, until your room turns into a ball pit and you have to sort of wade through, it's totally fine.
I just wade through the dice, 1 second.
Just hear the sound of shuffling.
Rustling dice.
To be fair, if you had a room full of table shakers, that would be dangerous because they'd probably go through the floor. They're big, heavy beasts.
You'd at least stub a toe or something, right?
Yeah. Not to be taken lightly.
No.
Quite literally, because they're
maybe throw that at some enemies instead of the rat.
That'd do
some damage, right? That's at least 10d10 force damage.
Yeah, I do 40 product placement damage.
Correct, yes.
I mean, come on, DM, come on. So seriously.
I guess you need to roll a strength check to throw it though, right?
Yeah, my character's strength tends always to be my dump start, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm not gonna lie.
One of them's got to go. It's just like, don't worry, I'll save you. Holding on to the rope, like, okay, pulled off. I mean, look, you know, sometimes you need intelligence, and you can't be a bard and a wizard without putting some points into charisma and imp, right? Like, it's just not going to happen otherwise.
Correct. Yeah, strength can go out the window. Wisdom out the window.
Who needs to be wise?
Everything else. Maybe a bit of dexterity, although in real life I do not have that at all. I am the most clumsy person I've ever met. I think I need some dexterity in real life.
We'll see if we can find you some magic items that are
lovely. Thank you.
I don't know. I mean, I'd love to say I could help you, but I'm pretty much born with two left feet and two left hands. But yeah, I had to do ballet in drama school, and my gosh, I felt so sad for the poor teacher. it wasn't me.
I'm the same. I've attended one ballet class. I am bad. I am very bad. I gave up that day, and I did not go back.
I'll say this myself, after an entire course of mandatory ballet, I did go from being sublimely awful to merely very terrible. So hey. it was an upward curve. Perhaps if I'd stuck at it for 960 years, I'd have been all right, but never mind. I have to make some sacrifices.
I think my favourite method of dance is improvisational contact. Put me in a disco and...
Contact improv?
Love it. Or just put me in a disco and allow me to move my limbs. You know, that's all I need. I don't need any structure. I don't need any steps. Just aim me somewhere.
Do you go for a silent disco?
I've never been to one, but I think I have a couple at my desk. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're ready. You're primed for that first silent disco. Get the practice in at the desk. Absolutely.
Totally.
That's a recommendation to everyone, right?
Yeah, that's it.
They know what you're missing out on.
Play D&D, have a silent disco at your desk. Have fun.
Well, speaking of silent disco, it's time to roll some silent dice.
Ooh, okay.
And what is it going to be? It's going to be a 10. Not sure why I went a bit Ian McKellen there, but who knows. 10. To be fair, Ian McKellen might be asking you this from your very own gaming table. What do you like in a DM?
Well, Sir Ian McKellen. Oh gosh, that's a big question, Ian. Creativity, absolutely. Gosh, you need to start with that. Even, like I said, with the... You know, if you're starting out DMing and you've got the module books, put some of your creativity in there. If you don't like what the book is saying, change it. Nothing wrong with it. Do it. If you're making a world from scratch... like Niall with Escape from Carceri. Hmm. You know, there's a lot of work put in there, I'm sure, and his creativity with the plot, the characters, the evil stuff, all the situations that we were in, that was amazing. Hmm. So I like creativity. What else? I like DMs who give players time to talk. Hmm. And as a DM, it's really hard to do because you're like, right, I've got this idea in my head of what's going to happen today. But sometimes your players will have a good 10-minute conversation that you weren't expecting. Let them have it, because that allows them to develop so much. I think Emma's good at that. From what I've seen, I think everybody is really, but Emma specifically allows... the players to take a moment to themselves, which I think is super important. And I think I'm really into immersion, so and that applies to like video games as well, but with D&D immersion comes a lot from description, and that description can be from the players, it can be from the DM, and it's quite important from the DM because that sets the tone for what the players are going to expect, what they're going to walk into. Even a question can immerse you in a situation, like how do you walk into that room? That sets things going of, should I be stealthy? That sets a bit of unease going as well. I think I saw Chris when they we're doing the Baldur's Gate that you're in.
Yeah.
Gloom Falls. And they were describing the negative plane. And Chris started with the ground was cracked. Mm. And it just built and built and built. And you guys, you players, you had an idea in your minds of what you had just stepped into. I was watching and I was like, good Lord, there's a lot going on here. But I was there with you. And I think knowing what to tell people, to describe to them, but knowing what to hold back is a really good skill to have. Mm. So someone who understands immersion and utilizes it well, that's what I would look for in a DM. Ian.
Thank you. You shall pass the DM quiz. I'm really not going to do that voice for the
Please entire... do. I request that for the rest of this.
Do not take me for some conjurer of cheap impressions.
That's beautiful. I love it.
Thank you. My dad actually got a scarf from Ian McKellen. It's the story that he never stops telling. They were sat next to each other at the opera, and apparently both liked each other's scarves and then exchanged scarves. So there you go. Oh. That's what passes for an anecdote amongst gentlemen of a certain age, I suppose.
I hope you get that scarf.
But it should pass down onto me. I'm pretty sure I don't have remotely the flamboyance needed to carry it off. But nonetheless, it would be nice to be just sort of put it in a glass case, just like Ian McKellen's scarf, like some sort of relic. And just hope that it's creative... powers leech into me somehow. I mean, that would be living the dream, right?
Yes.
Building off the back of that, not the Ian McKellen scarf thing so much, but the qualities of a DM and immersion things. Do you have like a favorite campaign setting? Do you like, would your preference be towards like a homebrew campaign in a recognizable setting or in an entirely newly constructed? Like how much lore do you like to have going into a story?
I think lore influences the setting. I don't think it should be like, I don't think the moment you step into a game, you should be told all of it.
Yeah.
I think it needs to come out naturally, organically. I think in terms of campaign settings, I like being surprised. So I'm happy with whatever. I don't really mind. I like reacting to stuff. That's my thing that I like to do. I'm not sure how I would feel about a sci-fi setting. Mm. I'd find it interesting, but I'm really into the fantasy as opposed to sci-fi in terms of playing. So as long as it's got roots in fantasy, I'm happy. Yeah. Sci-fi, not so much.
That's fair. I'm a massive map geek. Because I don't know, I like lines and colors and stuff. It's great, and oh yes, very nice. But I love this looking at like the HD map of Faerun or Abbey of Toril.
Oh, you zoom right in, don't you?
Yeah, and being like, oh, well, we could do a campaign here. That'd be cool. Like do it in Thay or something where everybody's probably a wizard.
there's some little tiny islands just I believe left of Moonshae, and it doesn't tell you what they are. I need to know. I get a bit frustrated sometimes when there's places that aren't quite described enough.
Yeah.
Or there's reference to a place and I know it's so that you can put your own stuff in, but I'm like, but tell me what should be there.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, I've seen them referred to as like the Forgotten Realms and the Known Realms.
Remembered Realms.
Remembered Realms. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Because so many campaigns seem to take place in Sword Coast or the Dale Lands and so on. And you look at things places like Aglarond and obviously the Netherrealm when that came out, fantastic. But I'd love to do a campaign, even a small one, just in like somewhere like Halruhr with the old Halruhr with the flying ships that jump out of magic. Because having read the books, I'm just like, this is such an interesting place. And there's so much more to this world than the kind of typical medieval magic that is just kind of the archetype that everybody understands fantasy to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great and I love it. But there's also a part of me that really wants to explore this world. And I guess like that's really my cue to pull my finger out, like look up some stuff and make it happen, right?
If you ever get a chance to read any of the new Waterdeep books, Waterdeep Dragon Heist is one of the new ones, that gives you so much in terms of what's within the city, what all the different wards are. And I happened to sort of stumble upon, it's called Waterdeep in the North, and I believe it's like a 1E book, and it goes into way more detail about like all the factions, and it gives you a map of the sewers, which isn't in the new book. So if you ever want a bit more lore, looked backwards. Sometimes, you know, they've taken it out for a reason, but sometimes they've just not included it in the new books because, for ease, I guess, they don't want to completely melt people's minds. But if you ever need, like, even the monster manuals, the 40 monster manuals, they're great. They give you ideas of how the monster would react to a situation, how the monster's tactics would work. Mm. And that's not so much just something that the 5e books do. So do feel free to look back a little bit, because you do get some good little gems.
And that's a great excuse to start rereading the shelves and shelves of fantasy novels that I still have somewhere.
Yeah, I too have these multitudes of shelves with lots of books on that I need to read again.
I'm just waiting for the Mistborn series to be made into an RPG, and I'm all over that stuff. Which, lusting after books and fantasy knowledge, brings us, I am afraid, to the end of our time together. It has been an absolute pleasure and a really, really enjoyable conversation, despite my many ramblings, but I think I redeemed myself there with the Ian McKellen impression.
Yes, and I believe that you should continue with that impression for the rest of these talk togethers.
I will put that to the team, and we'll see what happens when I'm sure I'll be taken on board and then thrown over the side once we leave the harbour. But nonetheless, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Liz. Is there anything that you want to plug at this point that we usually ask?
Gosh, I have nothing.
Show you're going to be in.
I have nothing specific to plug other than the show that I might be in, or the show that I'm going to be in.
Yeah. What show is that?
That show is Flustered in the Feywild. Emma is running it.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited.
And it will be launching very, very soon. So do join us for that. And thank you once again, everyone, for joining us today and being part of the show. If you enjoyed us, we stream every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. GMT. And we stream D&D games on Mondays and Tuesdays. On Mondays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. GMT, as you have heard, we are beginning Flustered in the Feywild, and Liz will be part of that, and Emma will be DMing, and many other talented, wonderful people as well. And on Tuesdays, we are still streaming our 8-parter Warriors of Waterdeep, the Anvil of Dunwithoen, so do join us with that and catch up. If there's anything you missed, it will be available on Twitch and YouTube. All of our shows do stream at twitch.tv/rolltogetherRPG, and there's a YouTube link in chat. As I say, don't forget, you can also enjoy us as a podcast. Many thanks again to our D20 Club on Patreon, without whom none of our shows would be possible. All of our sponsors and supporters, this is me, David Shears, signing off, saying stay classy at the table. See you next time.